Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review dated Thursday, March 26, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined Agriculture, Fertilizer Fears Cloud Farms. Growers Brace for High Prices, Supply Issues Amid Iran War by Jack Dura, Associated Press. Bismarck, North Dakota. Tennessee farmer Todd Littleton expects to pay $100,000 more for fertilizer this season, a 40% spike from his bill last year, thanks to the war in Iran, and he is scrambling to cover that extra cost. The problem is we're so strained financially coming into this issue, said Littleton, a third-generation farmer from Gibson County in the state's northwest corner. We have had a couple of record losses the last couple years. So everyone's kind of grabbing at straws anyway. And then to have input prices increase yet again, it just really couldn't happen at a worse time. Littleton, who grows corn, soybeans, and wheat, is among thousands of farmers across the country who will pay far more this spring than they expected for fertilizer that is essential to their crops. Nitrogen-based fertilizer is especially vital for corn, usually the largest crop in the U.S., and one that feeds the nation's livestock and is converted into fuel that helps power most U.S. cars and trucks. Farmers have complained about costly fertilizer for years, but prices have soared even higher since the U.S. and Israel attacked Iran on February 28th, leading to a slowdown in shipping through the Strait of Hormuz, a choke point for 20% of the world's oil and natural gas. Besides increasing the price of fuel, which is key in the production of fertilizer, the shipping disruption also has largely stopped the export of nitrogen fertilizers manufactured in the Persian Gulf and limited access to key fertilizer ingredients. About 15% of fertilizer imports to the U.S. are from the Middle East, and about half the global supply of the key ingredient, urea, comes from the region, along with 30% of ammonia, according to the American Farm Bureau Federation. When the ports started raising their nitrogen prices due to the conflict, due to shipping concerns, that directly affects me here on the farm, Littleton said. But it could be worse, as some farmers may not be able to obtain fertilizer at any price, said Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. We're being told that many of our farmers that haven't pre-ordered their fertilizer and paid for it may not even obtain the fertilizer that they're going to need during the season or for spring planting, Duval said. That's why this situation is so serious. Harry Ott, a cotton, corn, and peanut farmer who also leads the South Carolina Farm Bureau, said there isn't enough fertilizer stockpiled in warehouses to meet the demand in the coming months. It is really a dire situation that our farmers are facing, Ott said. Even before the current spike in prices, other factors in recent years have led to high fertilizer costs, starting with the war between Ukraine and Russia, which blocked access to raw materials and increased natural gas prices. China also cut phosphate exports as it focused more on domestic needs. The latest factors worsened those existing supply issues, which means that even if the Iran war was resolved, fertilizer prices likely won't quickly fall, said Jackie Fatka, a farm supply economist for creditor CoBank. There's going to be a tail to this that's going to take time to get everything turned back on, sent back out, Fatka said. And then there is the time it takes for shipments from the Middle East to reach the U.S., typically 30 to 45 days to reach the port of New Orleans. Some fertilizer is already stored in the U.S. and can meet demand amid the shortage of Middle East imports. But at some point, those supplies will run low. We don't quite know how it's going to shake out, said Nancy Martinez, Director of Public Policy, Trade, and Biotechnology for the National Corn Growers Association. Nitrogen and phosphate-based fertilizers are largely produced domestically which helps a little bit, said Anne Villamil, a professor of economics at the University of Iowa. But again, energy prices are an input, and so even if you're producing it in the U.S., if the cost of your inputs goes up, then it's going to be an increase in price to the farmers who want to buy it, Villamil said. Soaring oil prices could result in higher food prices, given the increased cost of diesel needed to transport products to grocery stores and petroleum products used in plastic packaging, said Chad Hart, an economics professor at Iowa State University. However, the increased fertilizer prices shouldn't significantly lead to grocery store increases, even as they put a crimp in farmers' profits. That's because on-farm costs are only a small part of what consumers pay at the supermarket. The Trump administration said it has taken steps to ease the cost of fertilizer, including moving to increase fertilizer imports from Venezuela, which U.S. Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins called a huge step that puts farm security and farmers first. The Department of Agriculture also notes it previously announced $12 billion in one-time payments to help farmers offset losses, primarily due to tariffs imposed by the Trump administration. In a statement, the USDA also said it has provided more than $30 billion in additional aid to farmers since January 2025, and the agency noted its support for a more competitive fertilizer marketplace that would ultimately lower prices. FATCA of CoBank said the $12 billion doesn't go far for farmers with a payment of $44 per corn acre, when the USDA estimates about $900 per acre for cost of production for the average U.S. farmer. Still, farm bankruptcies remain rare, with only 315 last year, a tiny percentage of the nearly 1.9 million farms nationally. And prices for the nation's two largest crops, corn and soybeans, have been climbing recently. Tom Waters, who farms about 5,000 acres of corn, soybeans, and wheat east of Kansas City, said the increase in fertilizer prices, along with other costs, makes it tough to make a profit when crop prices are so low. The margins get smaller and smaller, so we just have to really work hard to trim our costs and be as frugal as we can be, but still provide the soil and crop that it needs to grow and produce, Waters said. Decatur Schools Extended Learning Program WADE. Champions offer K through 6 services locally, may replace expiring service, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Decatur Public Schools Extended Learning Program could be replaced as soon as this fall by a program called Champions. Representatives of the company gave a presentation on its program at the Tuesday school board meeting. The district announced last month that its extended day program will end on May 22nd, largely because the COVID relief funds that paid for it have ended. The program, which cost the district approximately $2 million per year to operate, served 350 to 420 students in grades K through 6. Champions would not cost the district anything, said Beth Cortolillo, partnership manager for the company. The district provides only the space for the program, while Champions provides everything else: materials, equipment, insurance, security, hiring, and training, and would even hire most of their staff teachers from among the district employees who staff the extended learning program now. We offer white glove service, Cortolillo said. We are on site to unpack and set up materials with different stations, like creative arts, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, games and puzzles, library, math boosters, literacy boosters, summer camp, Lego and nature programs. We have a seasonal curriculum which is proprietary. It is not for sale. It's only for Champions, and it is accredited, which we're very proud of. It has thematic units, different activities that we call disguised learning. Students have so much fun that they don't realize they're learning. We can have programs that include junior counselors if you have older students who are interested in that. The company offers summer camp programs as well and can help low-income families apply for subsidies to pay the costs, with Champion staff who will help them fill out the applications, send them in, and follow up to make sure eligible families receive the assistance. Employees and military families receive discounts. She said the company is part of the KinderCare network nationally, and two other child care facilities affiliated with that program are already operating in the Decatur area: Skyrise School of East Decatur and Skyrise School of North Decatur. Champions offers K through 12 programs that can be extended to preschool and middle school, with specific curriculum for those age groups. Programs include indoor and outdoor play, a snack, and homework help from trained teachers. The board will consider approving a contract with the company at the first April board meeting. In other business, Superintendent Rochelle Clark recommended the school board consider temporarily suspending the summer voucher program in the summer of 2027. Summer vouchers are provided to district families to pay for programs with partner agencies like the Children's Museum of Illinois and the Decatur Park District. Families had to register by March 5th, and this year the vouchers are only for programs in June. With the Roadmap 2030 process underway and expected to be implemented during the summer of 2027, Clark said it would be prudent for the district to hang on to the fund set aside for the voucher program in case the money is needed for use in implementing the changes and initiatives of Roadmap. The board did not take any action on Clark's recommendation on Tuesday. At present, Roadmap 2030, a strategic plan for the district's future, is still under development, and no decisions have been made, though the committee expects to present a plan to the school board in May for approval. The plan is in two parts. One is for academic programs, and the other is for buildings and facilities. Phase two, the academic programs portion, is under development now. Phase three and four will both begin in June, as one group begins preparing the strategic plan initiatives for implementation, and another will begin considering a plan for facilities usage, which is not expected to be completed until 2027. Courts. Charges. Man-made abuse media with AI. By Tony Reed, Decatur. Artificial intelligence is showing up everywhere in our lives now, including charges of possessing images of child sexual abuse. Decatur man Alexander D. Martinez is in custody in the Macon County Jail, awaiting trial on 8 counts of having created such images of a female friend's juvenile sister using powerful AI photo manipulation tools. He has pleaded not guilty. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the friend of the 23-year-old defendant had raised the alarm in January after discovering the images. She was going through photos on Alexander's iPhone when she located approximately 5 or more photographs of her sister, age redacted, said the affidavit. She said the photos appeared to be normal photos, including a family photo that had been modified using artificial intelligence to make the girl appear fully nude, exposing her breasts and genitalia. The friend told police she found the images in a recently deleted album and transferred them to her phone to prevent destruction of evidence and then showed them to the police. The affidavit said detectives examined a total of 8 images and found 6 frontal view nude pictures of the girl. Another image depicted her in a see-through black one-piece bathing suit. One picture featured a watermark diagonally across the photo for a software program. A Herald and Review check on this program found it branded as a powerful online image editing tool. Police contacted Martinez while he was at work and told him they needed to speak with him about concerning images that had been found on his iPhone, according to the affidavit. Alexander immediately advised that he did not wish to speak with officers about any photos, the affidavit said. Martinez was arrested at 1:44 a.m. and later booked into the jail. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Lindsay Shelton denied him pretrial release after ruling he posed too great a threat to the public. He is due back in court for a pretrial hearing April 1st. In August of 2024, Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation making AI-generated child porn illegal. The law covers what are called deepfakes, altered images of real people, and purported children, meaning obscene images involving what appears to be children. Imagery is considered obscene if the average person would consider such images as purely sexual and lacking any scientific or literary purpose. Across the nation, Illinois is now one of 45 states to have passed laws criminalizing AI-generated or computer-generated or modified child sexual abuse material, CSAM. A child advocacy organization called Enough Abuse reports that between 2023 and 2024, there was a 1,325% increase in AI-related CSAM complaints. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children had logged 440,419 CSAM reports by June of 2025, an increase of 6,835 over the same period in 2024, a 6,345% rise. Enough Abuse says that 1 in 17 adolescents report being the victims of deep fake sexual imagery. State government. Home auto insurance bill passes the House. Measure may prohibit excessive unfair rates, by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. A bill would give the Illinois Department of Insurance authority to review and approve rates for both homeowners and automobile coverage. Those two proposals, which started as separate pieces of legislation, were combined into a single bill that passed the House March 19th. The combined bill now awaits Senate approval before being sent to Governor J.B. Pritzker. Pritzker initially called for rate review authority over homeowners' insurance last summer after Bloomington-based State Farm Insurance announced it was raising rates in Illinois an average of 27.2%, citing losses it had incurred from weather-related disasters in the state. Pritzker, however, questioned that rationale. He and legislative leaders suggested the company may have been shifting losses from disasters in other states onto Illinois consumers. He also used the controversy to highlight the fact that, unlike most other states, Illinois exercises no control over insurance premiums and has no law prohibiting excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory rates in the insurance industry. Separately, Secretary of State Alexei Janulius has been pushing for reforms in the automobile insurance sector, arguing insurance companies were setting rates based on factors such as a person's credit rating that have little or nothing to do with their driving record. Neither bill made it through the General Assembly in 2025. A bill regulating homeowners insurance passed the Senate during the fall veto session in October, but failed on the floor of the House just before lawmakers adjourned. Product of negotiations. The bill that emerged in the House last week was the product of continued negotiations among lawmakers and the governor's office, although the insurance industry says it still opposes the final product. Senate Bill 1486, as amended by the House, would prohibit companies from charging excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory rates for auto and homeowners insurance. And starting July 1st, 2027, it would require them to give consumers at least 60 days notice before raising premiums 10% or more. It would also abolish a procedure for the insurance department to review and approve new rate filings after July 1st, 2027. although companies would still be allowed to file new rates and begin collecting premiums under those terms immediately, the department would have authority to review those rates. If the agency finds them to be excessive, inadequate, or unfairly discriminatory, it would notify the company, which could then request an administrative hearing. If, after the hearing, the agency still finds the rates excessive, it could reject the rate filing. It would also have the authority to order the company to rebate customers for any excessive premiums it collected. The bill would prohibit the practice of cost shifting by requiring companies to use credible, state-specific data in setting rates whenever such data is available and statistically reliable. This legislation is important to home and car owners of Illinois who are struggling with increasing insurance rates. Representative Thaddeus Jones, Democrat, Calumet City, the bill's chief House sponsor, said during floor debate, insurance industry concerns. Representative Jeff Kicher, Republican Sycamore, who works as an insurance agency, said the new bill was an improvement over earlier versions. But he said it does not address the factors that he said are the real causes of rising premiums. The rising frequency of catastrophic weather events and the proliferation of storm chasers who exploit those events for their own profit at the expense of insurance companies. Those storm chasers are driving additional insurance claims and additional costs, he said. We continue to see lawsuits filed for dubious reasons that continue to drive costs. Kicher and a number of other lawmakers who work in the insurance industry abstained from voting on the bill. It passed 66-40 and will next be sent to the Senate. It was not immediately clear how quickly the Senate would take up the bill. The Illinois Insurance Association, the American Property Casualty Insurance Association, and the National Association of Mutual Insurance Companies issued a joint statement following the House vote, saying the bill represented one of the most sweeping and harmful insurance regulatory overhauls in state history, and that it would end up harming Illinois consumers. Illinois families are already facing an affordability crisis with property taxes, gas, grocery, and utility bills all rising, the organizations said. Inflation is squeezing household budgets from every direction. At a moment when lawmakers should be laser-focused on affordability, the General Assembly is instead advancing radical legislation that would make both auto and homeowners insurance more expensive for nearly every Illinois household. Gunfire leads to arrest. Police say man shot at another gunman who returned fire. By Tony Reed, Decatur. A police report says accused gunman Shaw Ron L. Shelby rode into East Clay Street in Decatur looking for trouble and found it. He opened fire and was shot at in return and ended up hiding in a stranger's house before being confronted by officers and arrested. A sworn affidavit filed by the Decatur Police Department said the violence started around 9:18 a.m. March 20th, when the 41-year-old defendant pulled up in his vehicle and got out, holding a .45-caliber handgun with an extended magazine. Shelby fired at least two rounds and an unidentified male to the west down the street, said Officer Eric Havens, who signed the affidavit. Shelby ran west along the west side of the roadway and stopped in front of a house in the 1700 block. Shelby pointed his gun towards an unobstructed south-facing window. A 31-year-old resident standing just inside the aforementioned window fired his legally possessed firearm at Shelby through the window in self-defense, believing that Shelby was going to shoot him. Reports from the scene describe Shelby as being injured, but not seriously. And it was not clear if the wound was caused by a bullet or some other means. Haven said the defendant fled down the street and hid in a house after smashing his way through a front window. While DPD officers were investigating the flight path of the suspect, Shelby exited the residence holding a Springfield Armory XD-45 pistol with an extended magazine. Shelby was taken into custody. The handgun was found to be still loaded with at least 3 rounds of .45 ammunition, with 1 round in the chamber. The affidavit offered no motive for Shelby's actions, and he was arraigned Monday in Macon County Circuit Court on a charge accusing him of the aggravated unlawful possession of a weapon. He was also charged with being a repeat felony offender in possession of a gun and being a felon in possession of a weapon. Judge Jack Kiley denied a prosecution request to hold Shelby in the Macon County Jail and granted him pretrial release. Conditions include no possession of any kind of weapon, and he is ordered to stay away from several addresses in the 1700 block of East Clay Street. Shelby is due back in court April 8th for a preliminary hearing when he will enter pleas to the charges. Decatur House Fire Hurts Too, Kills Dog, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. 2 human occupants were injured, and a dog died in a house fire Tuesday in the 600 block of East Decatur Street. The Decatur Fire Department was called to the scene at 8:52 p.m. and arrived to find heavy fire coming from the front of the house. The 2 occupants had escaped by jumping from second-story windows and were taken to a local hospital by Abbott Medical Services ambulances. No additional information about their conditions was available. A dog was found deceased inside. The first arriving engine made an aggressive attack through the front door. The truck company quickly cut a ventilation hole in the roof. Other crews arrived to assist with water supply and stretching additional hand lines. Conditions deteriorated, and crews were backed out of the building. The truck company used their aerial master stream to knock down the fire. Once conditions improved, crews were went back into the structure to fully extinguish any remaining hot spots. The cause of the blaze is under investigation by the Decatur Fire Department's Investigations Division. This article is accompanied by a very dramatic photo that shows a house with flames coming out the right and back side and smoke pouring out of a window that has a ladder propped up against it. Its caption reads, "Flames emerge from a home in the 600 block of East Decatur Street. The cause of the fire, March 25th, remains under investigation. Provided photo." We'll take a break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review dated Thursday, March 26th, 2026. Please stay tuned.